Hello, this is your host, Paul Harvey, at Life, Passion and Business. I realise I put this at the end of the programme most of the time, and I also realise I don't often listen to the end of podcasts. So I thought about telling you here before we get started. So the first thing is, this podcast is not supported in any way. We have no sponsorship. So if you would like to support us, do check out the Buy Me a Coffee link on this podcast app, and you'll also find it at the website. Okay, before I take you to the podcast, I want to give you a little bit of a reminder about the power of focus and accountability. This is the one tool that will really get you towards the goals you are seeking, towards the path you want to take. So listen to the end to find out more, or check out the link in the show notes. Anyway, let's get you back to the podcast. My name is Paul Harvey, and you are listening to Life, Passion and Business, a podcast born out of my desire to find greater meaning in life at the time when I thought there was none. Since that day, I have spoken to hundreds of people, and what I have discovered is that our story is everything. Because what we do, feel or experience is based on the stories that we tell ourselves. It's time to explore what it means to live a good life. How do we make this experience better? And more importantly, how do we lead the world to a better place?
A friend of mine had said to me, "I know that you believe you are never going to be okay again." She said, "But if you continue to believe that, that will be the truth." She said, "What I want you to do is every time you think, 'I am never going to be okay again,' I want you to immediately change that to, 'I will be okay someday, just not today.'" And honestly, that was brilliant. By saying, "I will be okay someday, just not today," gave me an out. So if I was having a bad day, it was okay. Today was not the day I was going to be okay.
Today's guest on the show is an example of a life of change and progression. It is a story of family, values and grief. It is a healing journey about finding peace, purpose and happiness. Maya Mansu is like many of our guests. She jumped from a successful corporate career to creating her own opportunity. And that opportunity was not only amazingly successful, it took the family relationship to a whole new level and really did change her life. Maya grew up watching courtroom dramas and always wanted to become a lawyer. So when looking for the right college degree, she was advised by a lawyer friend to avoid the legal degree and go for something technical. She became an associate in electrical engineering. Now, this was in the 1980s and not many women were in those classes. She learned a lot about how to stand her ground and tell rude jokes with the boys. On leaving college and getting into work, her career path followed the growth of the computer industry. And many years later, she was travelling the US with a successful sales career. And then she was pushed to reevaluate her life. She needed less travelling and more time with her family. Two of her family members were struggling with health issues, and her teenage daughters were growing up fast, and she was missing the journey. The time was right to make a change. She started a wedding photography business, and it flew. Not only did it do well, but her daughters joined her in the business, and together they had 9 wonderful years of creatively recording the magical wedding days of couples right across the US. However, in 2013, it all changed. Lindsay, her eldest daughter, developed leukemia and died. And so began the current iteration of Maya's life. Since her daughter's passing, she has written 2 books, Living Intentionally After Loss, Passion and Purpose, and Navigating the Small Business Path. Lindsay, her daughter, was instrumental in Maya's new career, which they created together in the last few months of her life. On Lindsay's passing, Maya had to overcome her grief in that space. She developed her own concept of peace, and her methods have helped many people find peace, purpose, and even happiness at various stages in their lives, especially those suffering from loss and wanted to rediscover purposeful living. That healing journey for Maya took several years of therapy, spirituality, and finding her true self. And part of that process was about learning to voice her truth, whether people wanted to hear it or not. It became her mission to help others who were grieving some type of loss to find themselves again, speak their truth, and then turn their loss into something meaningful. Let's join the conversation with Maya Mansu.
20 years ago, I had one of those leap of faith moments where I ditched the corporate gig for a small business and spending more time with my family. And I had no idea how profound that leap of faith would be. You know, when I look back now, you know, I struggled with that decision so much. But I had lost my dad, and my mother-in-law was terminally ill, and I had, you know, a 12 and a 14-year-old. And I just thought, if I'm ever going to take a summer off, like, I need to do it before the girls are not going to want to hang out with me. And there had to be more to life than my crazy, crazy job that was really kind of physically making me ill.
Can I take us back a little bit before then? Because it's nice to set the scene in terms of how you got into the corporate world. So did you choose? I mean, was that, you know, obviously when you were young, what did you want to be when you grew up? When you were young?
What I wanted to be when like. All the way through high school, I wanted to be a lawyer.
All right. And
I wanted to be Perry Mason. I wanted to be a defense lawyer. I wanted to save the innocent that were wrongly accused. I wanted to, you know, be that force in the world that helped those that needed help in a very profound way.
Nice.
And when I was in high school, I was still very much wanting to be a lawyer. And my sister babysat for someone, for a family, and the husband was a lawyer. Mm-hmm. My mom took me to go talk to him about, like, what should the course of study be?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, whatever you do, don't go get a pre-law degree. He's like, go get a technical degree, an engineering degree. And, of course, this was 1980. So the computer world was really just getting started.
Yeah.
And my dad was a professor of electronic engineering at a school where you could get an associate's degree.
Right.
And so I kind of mulled over this advice about going and getting a technical degree. And I said to my dad, I was listening to him one day talk to another prospective student about the program, and I was quiet. And then after that conversation finished and I had a chance to talk to him alone, I'm like, hey, Dad, can you tell me about the program?
Mm-hmm.
And neither of us up until that moment had really given it much thought because there were not many women in those days that were going into the field. But instantly he was like, of course you would want to do this. You're really good at math. You're very logical. So I ended up doing the technical route. So I got an associate's in electronic engineering.
That was unique for a lady in the 80s, wasn't it, really?
It was very unique. And
was it a hard course? Was it because it's a very male-dominated course? So you had to really,
Yeah, it definitely was. I was one of two women in a class of about 75 in my 2 years.
It's a stand your ground then, I imagine.
Oh, I learned a lot about standing my ground. I learned a lot about, you know, I learned the ability to tell a dirty joke and smile when others did. Because if they could make you blush, they would.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my dads was one of the professors in the program. So, you know, some of my male classmates were like, well, she's only here because her dad's the teacher.
So you had a double hill to climb. You had the nepotism hill to climb and the female hill to climb.
I did. But, you know, I did very well in the program. And they quickly figured out that it wasn't just because my dad was in the program.
Yeah.
It, you know, in many ways, I really kind of always tilted at windmills. I've always been, if this is my path, then I'm going to go do that. And I will do whatever it is to get there. I finished that program. I got a job in Portland, Maine at a semiconductor plant doing IT, and very quickly realized I was at least as smart as all of the other engineers that had a 4-year degree that were making a lot more money than me. So I immediately while working full time, went back to school and got my computer science degree.
Hmm.
And again, you know, in those days, there were not a lot of women in any of my classes.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I could say that I got sidetracked from being a lawyer because I definitely got into the techie part of the world. But I really feel like things work out the way they're supposed to.
Mm.
So I worked for the semiconductor company for about 12 years, went to work for a software company for like the next 10 years. And that was really at the point where I was like, there's got to be more to life than being on this treadmill. The software company that I worked for had a failed takeover attempt and ended up cutting about 50% of the employees. I was kept. I was told I would have a job as long as I wanted one, but I was working 80 to 100 hours a week. I was going to clients to appease them when we weren't delivering what we had promised and being told to tell them whatever I needed to tell them, which I won't say that I was told to lie, but I was told to be as
economical with the truth as you could be.
Yeah, that is a fantastic way to say that. And that is physically not in my DNA. And so between, you know, and this is a phase where my dad went through a long end of life illness. My mother-in-law had cancer and was terminally ill. My girls were 10 and 12. And I was waking up every morning physically ill because of the stress.
It's fascinating you say this because from my perspective, listening to you tell me the story, what's changing here is that you are in an environment that you first enjoyed, but the values of the environment are now changing. The values of the business are now changing. And so what it's doing, it's challenging your values because you're being asked to be economical with the truth with people.
Yes.
And also now you've got values outside that are more important. You've got your father and your mother-in-law. And so the scales of desire shift in the other direction.
Yes.
You know, the reason for being there is a lot less than the reason to leave.
Absolutely. And, you know, about the same time, I had photographed a couple of family weddings and I had just absolutely fallen in love with photography, everything about it and everything about the wedding photography in particular really drew me because it was all about all of those family values. I got to become an extended family member every wedding and see the love stories and see the connections and be a calming force during the process. And oh my gosh, I had no idea that when I started that business, that both of my daughters would join me in it.
Oh, I mean, I guess the beauty of where, and I'd not thought about this, this is just in the moment, the beauty of sort of being at a wedding is that it's the potential, isn't it? There's the potential of this, particularly first weddings with young people. It's the potential. It's like a birth, isn't it, of something new together.
It is. It is very much so. And so I, you know, being a solopreneur, you have to have help. You know, as my daughters got a little bit older, you know, they would help with putting materials together, or I can't tell you how many pictures I took of them to try out new posing, or I got a new backdrop. And they were very excited about it as well. And when my older daughter was 16, I was photographing a friend's wedding. And I thought, well, I can have Lindsay come with me. I will put a camera in her hands and she can go get all kinds of still shots. She was extremely creative. And I didn't realize that I gave, you know, that I literally in that process at that wedding gave birth to a photographer because she fell in love with the process as well. Mm. And she was so creative about how she did everything. And she was so artistically gifted that very quickly she really became a second shooter for me and really enjoyed the process. And so this would have been about 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to school for small business and entrepreneurship. And I thought how amazing it was to not only have my kids and have an amazing relationship as a mother and a daughter, but to have them see me in the business, see me doing business, and see a whole different side to me. I remember we had this one couple, the bride's mom was hiring me, and the bride wanted nothing to do with me. Even she didn't want a wedding photographer at all. And this woman was beautiful. She was a former model, but just, I don't know if it was a very tense relationship. And they had come to my home office, and, you know, anything that the mom wanted, the daughter didn't. And so it was a very interesting conversation. And then we left to go to the wedding venue site so that we could talk through their day there. And they got in their car, I got in my car, and maybe 10 minutes later, my phone rings and it's my daughter. And Lindsay said to me, you know, Mom, I just want to tell you that that was a really, really hard conversation that you had with them, and you did amazing. And like, it just was such a sweet moment. I mean, we had so many of those sweet moments in working together, because I could show them even more of who I was in a different way. And they took it so to heart. So when Lindsay went to college, she's like, I'm going to study small business and entrepreneurship. And she was at the early forefront of social media. And so as an 18, 19-year-old, she was coming to my business networking meetings and being asked by like the Rotary Club to come talk to them and educate them about social media. She could go hold her own with adults of all ages. One year, I think she was about 19 or 20. We decided that she would do the Portland Made Bridal Show by herself, and I would go do another bridal show that was on the same day. This kid went and talked to like 600 brides over 2 days, like got us business. I mean, she was amazing. And so I had no idea that when I started my business, that it would so enrich our relationship and our lives.
Mm.
My younger daughter also came on as a second shooter and was involved in things as well. But the most amazing part about this is if I had not taken that leap of faith.
Yeah.
We would not have had the 9 years together that we had as a business.
Mm.
And in 2013, my older daughter passed away.
Yeah.
And so now I look back and I can say, not only was it a gift to spend that time together in the way that we did and like have the joy of sharing all that, but had I stayed in that 80 to 100 hour a week job, I would never have known my daughter for the last 9 years of her life.
And you had an amazing, I mean, that's moved me actually. I have to say it's moved me a lot. You had that amazing gift that you were able to be with, work together for those 9 years and really appreciate each other. And she appreciated you.
Yes.
And the universe gave you that opportunity in some way.
Yes.
How did she pass?
She was diagnosed with leukemia.
Wow.
In 2012, she got married in August. She turned 23 in October. She was diagnosed with leukemia the week of Thanksgiving here in November. And it was a very short illness. She passed away in February of 2013.
Yes, there are two forms of leukemia. One's long and one's short.
Yes. And from the moment she was diagnosed, I stopped everything.
Mm-hmm.
I spent the majority of those 3 months with her at times extended 24/7 stays. When she went down to Boston, I was in the hospital with her pretty much 24/7. And she wanted me there. Her husband, my husband, had to, you know, keep working to pay the bills and all of that, and maintain the insurance. So, and she wanted her mom. Mm. And there was nowhere else that I needed to be.
it's a beautiful journey and at the same time, still very hard to deal with. So how do you come back from that?
Well, you know, it was so interesting because after she had stopped treatment and before she died, one of the days we were down in Boston at Mass General, and one of the nurses, I was talking with her, and she looked at me and she said, "You need to be a grief counselor." And I was floored in the moment because I was like, she hasn't even died. I don't even know grief yet. And here you are saying you need to be a grief counselor. And the other thing that happened at about that same point was my daughter, she's laying in her bed and she said, "Mom, I need you to pull out your iPad." I said, "Okay." So I pulled it out. I'm like, "So, you know, what do you need?" And she said, "I need you to write down the list of books you're going to write for me after I die because I'm not going to get to them." And she went on to describe a series of survivor's guides. So here she is laying in a hospital bed. We know death is imminent. And she's like, "So I want you to write survivor's guides about how people get through things." And I'm like, "Okay, thank you." And then she passed. And then I literally sat in a chair and cried for 2 months. A friend of mine about that point said to me, "I know that you believe you are never going to be okay again." She said, "But if you continue to believe that, that will be the truth."
Mm. Yep.
She said, "What I want you to do is every time you think I am never going to be okay again, I want you to immediately change that to, I will be okay someday, just not today." And honestly, that was brilliant on so many levels. You know, I was not prepared to even think that I would be okay. And so she said, "I need you to just say, I'm going to be okay someday," would not have created change in me. But by saying, "I will be okay someday, just not today," it gave me an out. So if I was having a bad day, it was okay. Today was not the day I was going to be okay.
And of course, what happens is the days you're okay get a bit more and the days you're not okay get less until eventually there's more okay days than there are not okay days.
Exactly. But I think it also mentally shifted me to really remembering that everything is a choice. Now, I can't change that she died. I can't change what I feel is the life sentence of grief I've been given because there's not going to be a day I'm not going to miss her and grieve her. But I don't have to, and there are days when I'm like, that's my day today. I'm still there. But the majority of the time I can wake up and go, you know what? There's a choice today. I can choose to be happy today. I can choose to heal myself. I can choose to be part of other people's healing journey. And honestly, I feel like when I can talk about my journey and I can be the shoulder that someone else leans on, I get the healing from that too.
Mm. Mm. It's fascinating that, and I did talk about this as a coach quite a lot, nothing on the outside of us has any impact on us. Nothing. There's no switch from the outside that you can do anything. You can't, you can add a drug maybe, but you can't change anything from the outside without something going on the inside. And indeed, it's always a choice. It's always a trick of the mind how we choose to handle something. And that, you know, what you're talking about is a trick of the mind. You're saying, yeah, today you've given yourself an out. Today, it's not today, but tomorrow will be better.
Yes. You know, I came to understand in the early years after her death that peace was the thing that I most wanted.
Hmm.
And if you look up the definition of peace in the dictionary, it's like, it's an absence of war. And I'm like, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for an absence of war. So I actually redefined the word peace. And my definition is that it's the inner state of being reached when you can find contentment, joy, and connection regardless of your circumstances.
Oh, that's lovely.
I feel like that's a profound way to define peace. And, you know, it's so interesting because the more I played with the concept of peace and how to create that contentment and that joy and that connection for myself, and the more I shared that with others, the more others wanted to know about that. And I laugh because I ended up in prison over it. I say that, but I was invited to go speak at a men's prison.
Okay.
and to talk to them, because I had joined a Toastmasters group to learn to speak about this, because I'm so passionate about it. I wanted to learn to be able to be eloquent and passionate.
Mm. Yeah.
So I joined this Toastmasters group, and I was assigned a mentor who became a very close friend. And she was the mentor for a group in the men's prison, helping them learn how to speak. And she's like, you have to come to prison because the men need to hear your messages. They will relate. So the first time I went, you know, I get locked in, and I was only going to feel what it was like to be there, to see if I wanted to go and speak. And as it turns out, one of the men had lost his privilege to go to the meeting, and now there's a 20-minute opening. And my friend looks at me and she's like, you know what you want to say. Are you ready? And I'm like, I don't have notes. I don't have a speech of 18 minutes prepared, but I do. I know what I want to talk about. So I got up and I spoke for 18 of those 20 minutes. And I thought, what do I have in common with these men? I have a very different background. A middle-aged woman who's going in to talk to men who have done bad behaviors and they've ended up where they've ended up. And yet that first visit ended up in creating a program. I actually got a program to prove through the prison service to go in and talk to the men about creating peace, regardless of their circumstances. And unfortunately, we only had two meetings and then COVID hit. And but it was such a profound experience to go in and talk to people that humanity had given up on in many ways. And the first meeting of this Creating Peace group, at the end, I asked for feedback and what they wanted to do next week. And one man raised his hand and he said, for the first time since I was arrested, I feel human again tonight.
Hmm.
And I just thought, you know, that's what we all need, is to feel human.
Yes. Yes. We need to remember that there's more that connects us than divides us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And sadly, in politics and just about everything in this world, seems to want to divide us.
You know, I, especially living in the US, things are very divisive here. And
well, we're in an election year too, so we're having similar divisive conversations going on. So I know you'll have it a bit harder than I do, but yeah, we're both watching this unfold going, really?
The thing, though, is, and I will own up to the fact that I am probably quite naive in this thinking, but world peace is one decision away on the part of every human being. If everyone woke up today and said, today I will not do harm to one another, then we would be at peace.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
But they say the guns have never felt silent, have they? The gun, you know, although they said they had an armistice somewhere, the guns have never felt silent, fell silent everywhere across the world.
Exactly.
Hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, I'm just one person. There's nothing I can do. And I disagree with that. Because if we each personally decide to look inwards, to do the healing from the traumas that we've had, you know, when Lindsay died, I thought the tears would never stop. And it was definitely a lot about her death, but it was also it triggered every trauma I'd ever had in many ways. And so this great purging began. And it's hard work. It's ugly work. But it is so important that we do the generational healing. And in my own way, I'm fighting for the underdogs now, because if I can help others get through their trauma and figure out what their purpose and their passion is, and then help them do that to earn a living, then I've done my part in trying to make the world a better place.
Mm. That's a nice thought. That's a lovely way of putting that. So did you go back to the photography business, or did you draw a line under it?
I drew a line under it. And I had to, for a couple of reasons. And it was less about me and more about the brides that I would have been serving. You know, my daughter had just gotten married. She died a week. She died a week before her 6-month wedding anniversary.
Mm.
And I could not imagine being able to go to a wedding and not sob through it. And I thought, no bride needs that on her wedding day to have her photographer like ugly crying in the background.
And in some ways, it that was it, wasn't it? That was the journey. It had served its purpose. Its purpose was for you and Lindsay to get close together for 9 years and have this journey together. And when she died, that was the time to end it and move on to do something else.
You know, it's really interesting because I look back and like, there are so many things that Lindsay left me. You know, she left me so much business knowledge that I would never have gotten on my own. We had, in the fall of 2011, so about a year before she died, she said, Mom, let's go to San Francisco and go to this conference with Brendan Bouchard about the Experts Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's figure out like how to build businesses and let's help people do that. And it was an amazing trip. And we took a few extra days and drove up and saw the redwood trees, and she was 21. So we did some wine tasting, and it was a fantastic trip. And it seemed like at the time, it seemed like one of those side trips in life that you take without a lot of purpose. And yet I have used that training to help so many other people build their businesses. And Lindsay being so on the forefront of social media, one of the things that I'm just starting is something that I call Lindsay's Lyrics. And in social media, one of the biggest questions that I get asked all the time is, well, I don't want to do something daily. That seems like a lot of work, but I don't want to just do once a week. So what's the answer? And I said, well, my brilliant daughter suggests this. You do social media 3 times a week. On Monday mornings around 9 o'clock, you post something really hopeful and inspirational because people are getting back to work. They're not really into their job yet. So they're looking on social media, and the hope is what they need.
Mm.
And on Wednesday afternoons around 3 to 4, people are hitting that like midweek, like, oh, it's been such a long week. Again, they're searching social media, but now you give them something to think about, get their wheels turning. And then on Friday afternoons between 1 to 2, you give them something to do for the weekend. Could be small, could be big, but you give them an action and see if they do it. And I thought how brilliant that was, but like, how meaningful her understanding was of our human nature. And she wasn't saying sell to them 3 times a week. She was like, give them something 3 times a week when they need it. And I, like, I've done that for years, and I know many people that have done it. And I think it really does make a big difference.
Well, you're building up a relationship with people around that, a helpful relationship. So when they need you, they know you're around, that you're always going to be there.
Yes.
It's a hat I took off a couple of years ago, the marketing stuff. So,
yeah.
But it's nice to hear it. It's a nice format, that particular one.
Mm.
So where are you now? What is it that you're doing now?
So I laugh because I never do anything by halves. So in December, I published a book called Living Intentionally After Loss, 8 Steps to Reclaiming Your Passion and Your Purpose. And that book is intended to help those that are grieving, that may have lost someone they love, may have lost a relationship that was meaningful. You know, it's grief is whenever life doesn't turn out the way you expect it to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can use these steps to start to make choices and set your intentions about how you want to feel, how you want to live your life. And then in January, I published the companion book to that, which is Navigating the Small Business Path, 10 Steps to Doing What You Love and Earning Your Dream Life. And so, you know, what I do is I help people like myself. You know, after Lindsay died, the ongoing mantra in my head is, why am I still here when she is not? What is my purpose? And I think so many people reach that point in their lives one way or another where they're like, what am I doing? Why? What is going to add meaning to my life? And so if you can connect back to what your passions are, what you care deeply about, what excites you, what lights you up, and then the bigger question of purpose, it gives you something to focus on that brings you joy. And I describe purpose as that service that you're here, that reason why you're here in the world. And for some people, their process kind of ends there. Maybe their purpose is not how they want to earn their living. It may be volunteer work. It may be just joy. But for those that kind of want to take that purpose a step further and actually do that to earn their living, then I can help them kind of create a small business that's set up for long-term success. You know, one of the things that I see out there in this world are all of these business coaches. There's thousands, hundreds of thousands of them probably, who are like, let's make $10,000, you know, in your first month. And it's very money focused. And there's nothing wrong with that per se, except I don't think that's a recipe for long-term success. Because if you, you know, dive in deep and spend all your time making that $10,000, and either you don't make it and you're terribly disappointed, or you do make it, but you don't have a life outside of that. My approach is, let's get your ducks in a row. You know, let's figure out, how do you want to feel in a business? How do you want your customers to feel? What is the problem you're solving? Who are you helping? Do you like helping them? What's your passion? Because if you're not passionate about it, it's not the right thing. You know, if you just wanted to make money, you could open a daycare. If you love small children, that's probably a good way to go. But if you hate children, no matter how successful you are short term, you're not going to be successful long term, because you're going to hate it. The kids are going to hate it. Their parents are going to hate it. It just, it's not going to work. So I help people like look at all of their life and figure out, you know, are you a morning person? Are you an evening person? Are you, you know, do you have kids that you want to be home and put them to bed every night? Or are you like, I'm totally fine working in the evenings and weekends, which is when my clients need me? Like wedding photography, that's your meeting during the evenings and you're working on the weekends. If that doesn't work with the rest of your life, that's not going to be successful long term. So
it's interesting point. What does success mean to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, success to me means that when I go to bed at night, I feel exactly the way I want to feel, that today has been a good day. And one of the things that I teach people is how to set a feeling-based life versus a want-based life, because you make decisions very differently. So probably about 3 years into my grief journey, someone taught me this technique where you choose 5 to 10 words, feeling words, that describe how you want to feel. And so when I did this the first time, I immediately wrote down 7 words. I knew exactly how I wanted to feel. And I drove home and crawled into bed that night, could not remember one of the 7 words I'd written down. So I got up, got the list, and I played word games until I came up with 4 guiding principles. My first one was, does whoever or whatever fit my vibe? Where vibe stands for, I want to live life vibrantly and I want to feel soul deep beautiful. And so if whatever, whoever doesn't make me feel that way, I've got to make a different decision about moving forward. The second question is, does it bring me wojo, where wojo stands for wonder and joy? I want to live life like a three-year-old who's excited about life, like everything's amazing, and it brings me such great joy.
That's a lovely thing to be able to do that, and really difficult. I find it really hard to live life in that level of joy. But personally, I find it hard.
I think it depends on where you look for it.
And you know, it's allowance. Do I allow myself to experience it?
You know, when Lindsay, and I think the reason, part of the reason why that's so profound for me, again, my daughter gave me so many gifts as she was dying. But one of them was she was really out of her body more than she was in at this point. And she got very animated. And her husband and I were in the room and she's like, Mom, Ben, this is really important. It's really important. You need to write this down. We're like, okay, Lindsay, what is it? She's like, bliss is the moment that makes you smile.
She was well connected when she was going, wasn't she? She really was connected. She was tapped into something.
She was. And you know, the other gift that she gave me on that topic was she was laying in her bed. It was just, I was the only other one in the room with her at the time. And her eyes were closed. She wasn't looking at me. And she said in the sweetest voice I have ever heard, Mom, you are so beautiful. Don't let anyone ever tell you that you're not. And I knew she was looking at my soul. And I was 50 years old. And it was the first time I had ever felt soul deep, beautiful. And so that's something that I try, like if I could only say one thing to every person that I met for the rest of my life, it would be that they are soul deep, beautiful.
Yeah.
So yeah, she was very well connected.
I guess when you're close to the veil, that's when it happens. You go, your connection gets better.
Yes.
That's something we all find out at some point, I guess, you know, it's something, and it's something that's hard to appreciate unless you experience it.
Yeah.
So you clearly contribute to the world. How do you feel you contribute to the world? To me, you do contribute because of the story we're having, the conversation we're having. But how do you feel you contribute?
I think that I'm going to say three ways, and let's see if I remember them all by the time I get done. The first way is that I have profoundly worked on healing myself and my family, because I think that we all show up better in this world and that we make the world better when we come to it from a healed position instead of a trauma-based position.
If only our leaders will follow that premise, we would live a better world.
I think we would. I absolutely think we would. I think the second way is probably the more obvious way, which is I write, I speak, and I want to spread the message of peace, not in a soft and gentle voice, not in a pounding them over the head or telling other people that they're wrong, but simply to say, I will hold space for you while you do your healing. And if I can help you on that path, I will. And I think that, I mean, I guess maybe it goes back to the first, but just the belief that peace, that world peace is possible. I think that our beliefs shape our world.
So I agree with you.
And if we buy into the divisiveness that is all around us. I can't open an internet browser without headlines screaming at me things that should simply, you know, cause such disruption in my life. But my belief is that I guess I believe in people. I guess I believe that we are better than those headlines, and that, you know, the people who create the divisiveness are in such a smaller number than those of us that would reach out and do anything to help another human being who's struggling.
Hmm.
And again, maybe that's naive, but I find that my life is filled with connections of people that are wonderful. And so I choose to believe in them.
That's lovely. Yeah, I'm really enjoying our conversation, Maya. Thank you so much for being part of this today.
Thank you.
Contribution has a flip side, and it's how do you contribute to yourself?
Yeah.
How do you look after yourself?
When Lindsay died, all right, before Lindsay died, I was the person who took care of everyone else at my own expense.
Mm-hmm.
I was not good at taking care of myself. And when she died, I went into survival mode because I couldn't figure out how I was going to survive this.
Yeah.
And the way I survived it was I went in, right? I started to do the work. I started to process the feelings. I started to listen to my own intuition about what was my truth and what was not my truth. What had other people layered on top of me that was their truth based on their perceptions? So I think one of the funniest moments was when I realized how many people in my life were telling me that I was not acting like myself and that I felt like I had never been more myself. And that really kind of a light bulb went off and I went, oh, wait, so if this is not myself and if this is not myself, but this is myself and this is myself, It really started an exploration of, well, what else is not myself that I've been holding a belief about because someone else gave me that belief? I think one of my gifts in my makeup is that I can step back and be an observer of my own life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a gift because I think a lot of people can't always see what others can see. Although I think that belief, maybe that belief is selling people short. But really, I jokingly refer to my life as a spiritual scavenger hunt. I am always out there thinking about, well, is that true? Is that not true?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? We perceive the world from the information we receive. And then We make judgments and value judgments out of that. You know, the people that didn't see it said you were different. You're just not meeting the picture they have of you. Suddenly the picture they have of you, you're conflicting against something. So it's all about value judgments and perceptions. Everything's about perceptions. And people choose not to look at themselves because they don't actually want to know half the time because they probably carrying not a good perception of themselves anyway. So I don't know if it's true or not. Nasty. So there's a constant duality going on in our heads about whether we want to know the truth or not and what is the truth and who said it's the truth anyway.
You know, one of the things that I really did was I've really become very spiritual and have really delved into my connectedness to what I will call the divine source of love. You know, I think that we humans have made our connection to something greater than us so much more difficult than it needs to be. We don't need a middleman. I'm not saying that sometimes middlemen can be helpful, but in general, you know, I started doing a lot of journaling, a lot of writing, and a lot of, I think, what would be called automatic writing. So, universe, today, what do I need to know? And I would start writing. And it is amazing how loving and beautiful and kind the universe is when you allow that to happen. And it was funny because in the early days, if it came out and it was really super kind and loving and beautiful, I'm like, well, clearly that's from the universe because that's not my thought process about myself. But as you allow yourself to have that happen and you start to see these beautiful messages that are coming with such love and no ulterior motive, if you will, then you can start to feel into, is that true? As opposed to the criticism I get from whoever. I believe in magic. I believe that there are so many things beyond our understanding that go on in this world. Probably sounds a little corny, but some nights I lay in bed at night and I'm just like, I am just going to send love out into this world for whoever needs it. Because it's such an easy thing to do. It doesn't cost me anything. And I don't know, I just think it's beautiful. And I think that if everybody were to spend 5 minutes a day focusing on pumping love out for the world, I think we'd all look at the world differently.
You're a beautiful person, Maya. I can really see what your daughter was seeing. Absolutely.
Thank you.
So you've touched on it. So the question has to be asked, and I was going to ask it anyway, but you've touched on it beautifully. So what's the meaning of it all? And that is the faith question or the unfaith question, or it can be anything that answers that question. But for you, what does it all mean?
All love. It's all about love. Love and it's all of its different forms. You know, I have a dog and two cats that are just pure love. Now, do they have their moments where they're cranky? Absolutely. But, you know, I have them, my younger daughter and her husband. At the moment, I'm in the middle of building a new house and it's quite delayed. And my husband and I split up. We divorced after we lost our daughters, as is the case with many, many couples. Hmm. And he said, come live with me while you're building your house. And we get along great. You know, there is so much love in this world. And I think we need to remember to open our eyes to the love that we're receiving because it comes in from all different places.
That's nice. That is beautiful.
Thank you.
So we're coming to the end of our time together. What is it that you are looking for? Or what is it you want to give to the world? What do you want my listeners to do? Or who do you want to talk to?
I would love to talk to anybody who one of the two books appeal to. And in fact, if your listeners want free copies of my books, they can get them. The Living Intentionally book is at www.shecreatespeace.com/free-book.
Mm-hmm.
And the small business book is at www.thesmallbusinesspath.com/free-book. And so
it's very generous of you to give them away.
I live by the principle that a third of what I do is my free gift to the world. A third of what I do is as affordable as I can make it, and so that it can reach the most amount of people. And then I have some private clients that I work very closely with for extended periods of time. But I think that the books are my love letter to the world.
Oh, that's lovely. Yes, absolutely. So are you on social media and other platforms?
I am under the Small Business Path. So if you add the Small Business Path on Instagram or Facebook.
And are you on LinkedIn or other social channels at all?
I am on LinkedIn, but haven't really fully flushed that one out yet. But
Okay. So all those links will be available at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. So you can catch up with Maya there. And she is worth catching up with. She's a lovely lady, a very beautiful soul. And I'm sure you'd have a wonderful conversation if you did connect with Maya. So please do. Maya Mansu, thank you so much for being with me today. I really thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. You truly are a beautiful soul. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Maya Mansu. If you'd like to connect with Maya, you can find her at her website, shecreatespeace.com. She also has a website called thesmallbusinesspath.com. There are the two books, Living Intentionally After Loss, and Passion and Purpose and Navigating the Small Business Path, both available on Amazon. She's also on Instagram and on LinkedIn. And you can find all those links at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com.
Okay, as I mentioned at the beginning, now is a time to discover how to find some more focus in your life and get things done. Okay, so we're all looking to move forward. We all want to find some measure of success in the world. And if you've heard the podcast, you know I have a view of success, but that's another conversation. But the point is, however you look at this, we want to get things done. You might want to get a project over the line. You might have a really big goal that you're looking to move forward on. And the problem is, whenever we start these projects, whenever we do anything like this, there's always some resistance. There's always something that gets in the way. And that can be a multitude of things. But the key to this is, how do we retain focus and stay with the project and push it over the line? And that's where focus coaching can help. Now, it's a process that I discovered some 15 years ago during my coach training. And it's something sometimes called focus coaching, turbo coaching, speed coaching. And it's a really simple process where we define what it is you're trying to achieve. And we look at the resistance that you're experiencing in that achievement. Come up with some strategies to solve that resistance. Commit to setting a date, and I hold your feet to the fire to make sure that you do that. So there's a commitment, there's an accountability process, and that's it. That's basically how it works. You get it done. And I can tell you, it is so powerful when you start working in this way, particularly when you work with someone who supports you in the process of doing it. And one thing to remember, you know, success is never guaranteed, but the struggle always is. And that's what this coaching is designed to do. It's designed to get you through the struggle towards the success you're looking for. So do check out the link on this podcast or at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. You will find a video of me again explaining this process. But if you go below the video, there's a booking link where we'll have a discussion about your project and how we could get you sorted. As always, if you have enjoyed this podcast, if you found anything here of any use, please share it with a friend, because that's how people like yourself find good podcasts. If you can, give us a review. Give us a 5-star review. I have to ask for 5 stars. Why not? I think I'm worth it. When you support a podcast in that way, you have no idea how effective it is, both in terms of supporting us on the platform, but it also makes us feel good. Yes, it makes me feel good, and I like to feel good. As always, thank you for your time and attention. I will catch you next time.